Weekly.
Is MMO Weekly.
Yes! Welcome, welcome, welcome! The show that comes to you once a week, covering the Hollywood week that was and the Hollywood week to come. This is MMO Weekly, Mike, and Oscar Weekly, hashtag MMOW, hashtag MMO Weekly. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also, Mike. Mike, what's going on?
Yeah, it was a big week last week, and it is a weird-looking week to come, and we got some fun episodes, I think, and this turned out to be another loaded episode in what we thought was going to be a post-Oscars slower news week. It was not a slower news
week. We just are on the heels of covering, you know, a couple Oscar sprint profiles last week, couple surprise Oscar sprint profiles, especially for one of the films, and both, we covered Captain Marvel, we covered Fighting With My Family, which was a huge surprise that we were doing that as an OSP. And then, on the heels of all of that, we had forthcoming this week, this past week that just happened down at South by Southwest, we had the introduction of what seems to be poised to be a huge Oscar breakout hit in Jordan Peele's Us, which we're going to talk about later on in this episode.
Major contender.
Yeah, hopefully anyway. And like I said on Twitter, you know, the Academy got it wrong 2 years ago when Get Out should have won Best Picture. So maybe this is a chance to get it right.
Right in our wheelhouse, a horror movie of that quality wins.
And it's not even just the movie that's getting big blood. I mean, we're going to get into all of it, but there's actresses that are involved in it that are getting a lot of love. And we're going to talk about our plans for that movie coming up as well. A lot of stuff to get to, but let's start first, as we do with every MMO Weekly, talking about what we're watching, Michael.
The Us movie's coming out, but this is what we're watching now. Adding verses.
Yeah, it was nice. I like it. Good touch.
I watched a lot of great stuff this week. I'm very high on a lot of this stuff. So The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I finally got into it, Mike. I watched both seasons 1 and 2. It is the best anything I've seen in a while.
They were happy to hear that. Their Twitter account got at us and was having fun with you. I saw that. That was cool.
I am so happy after watching every episode of this. It was just one of those things where I talked to you at the beginning of the week. I was like, should I watch this downer of a TV show? Or should I just continue watching Maisel and give the both reviews in our What We're Watching segment? And I was like, you know what? F it. I only live once. I'm going to be happy this week in particular. And I stuck with it. Mike, this reminds me a lot of Crashing quite a bit because it's all about stand-up comedy and the history of stand-up comedy. It reminds me a lot of Lenny, the movie we watched with Lenny Bruce and Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin portrayal there from 74,
One of our very first retrospectives there. He's a great character in this. So no doubt about it, this was right up my alley in terms of subject matter. But what I love most is just, this is so well written. The dialogue, not only on the stage, but off the stage, they're all comedy bits. And it's very well structured. And when the Maisels are speaking to each other, any two Maisels, or when she's talking to her mom, it plays like a comedy bit. And then she's got a ton of shtick with her manager, Bornstein, who's also been on Mad
Alex
TV.
Alex Bornstein, yep.
And
she's the voice of Family Guy there.
Yeah, of course, and Family Guy, Lois. And it's just great dialogue from start to finish, every episode. The real trick of the show, though, is that they make you love every character. Even if the characters do wrong, and they do, there's rounded characters here, but you fall in love with each and every of the principal characters, and that is so much easier said than done, and I recommend this show to everybody. I'm not surprised it's won all of the awards.
So all the adulation and awards Rachel Brosnahan has won, you are co-signing.
I co-sign, yeah. This is undeniably excellent show, no question about it. And, you know, I'm biased because I love shows like this.
Right.
I love I love a heavily scripted show with a lot of, you know, goods given on the page. And then, of course, great performances. So I also saw How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. This is How to Train Your Dragon 3. This was great.
So set the stage. You saw this as the first part of your double feature before you saw Captain Marvel.
At the last second, I changed my reservation for Captain Marvel from a movie that I did not have a reserve seat, and I just saw an IMAX showing like added or whatever. I didn't see it the first time. So I got a reserve seat for Captain Marvel. So I was like, all right, now I don't have to show up at 6. I can walk in at 7 because I got a reserve seat. So I went to How to Train Your Dragon at 5. And Mike, what a great decision, because I just thought this was kind of like, all right, ho-hum, obligatory watch. Let me go see it. Probably, like you predicted it, probably going to be a best animated feature contender. Let me see it on the big screen. What a great experience this one was. It delivers more than visuals, though. I thought it was a really strong story that got me emotional. Now, I don't know if I have psychological difficulties just in life, or if I'm just
Know where this is going.
If I'm just softened to the point where, like, a movie like this just gets me emotional.
Okay.
Because maybe I'm neglecting certain programming in my life.
It touched something in you.
Yeah, but I should be married at this point in my life. I should have kids at this point in my life.
Technically are. We see each other enough.
Right, but maybe my paternal instincts are kicking in, uh-huh. and I just think this is great for kids.
Is this your way of softening the blow to say that you cried to a cartoon and How to Train Your
I did not cry. I will let you know when I cry. I'm not ashamed. But I did not cry during this movie, but I got a little emotional, and I thought they did a great job.
High marks across the board. 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.9 on IMDb right now, so it's getting great reviews, certainly.
For the record, I would also love it if they remade this movie 20 years from now as a rated R, hard R TV show or film.
I think they tried that with Reign of Fire, which we've talked about here before.
This would work, though, so well. This would work so well, because I'm thinking, like, what if they actually murdered all those people? That would be awesome, and they had real, real battles.
This is Mike's way of prepping you that we're going to talk about Game of Thrones later.
We might! Wait, yes, Mike! Mike, I saw Isn't It Romantic with Rebel Wilson.
I can't believe you actually saw this.
I laughed a lot.
Of course you did.
I laughed a lot. This tickled my funny bone. It's in theaters now.
You've done more for this movie than I think the distributor has.
It's like a 60%er, and I don't think I would give it like a hugely high grade.
I'm amazed you didn't have us review it as an OSP.
It's funny. It's funny. It's like another movie that's in my wheelhouse, which is why, you know, you make mockery of me right now, but it's in my wheelhouse because I love spoofs and parodies, and this was a very well done parody. You had Adam Levine, Liam Hemsworth, you got an actress from Glow, I forget her name, but it's just a great cast and a lot of fun scenes and a lot of laughs. So
good.
I recommend it. Can't be positive about everything, though. I watched Vox Lux on VOD. This is a carryover from last year with Natalie Portman playing a pop star, basically another take on Lady Gaga's career.
Yeah.
Even though the contrived plot works in all these school shootings.
Oh,
and
God.
So that's super heavy subject matter to work into a kind of a musical biopic format. And I don't think it worked. I really don't.
You're not the only one. It's not getting great reviews.
I think they stretched for the importance. Now, if it was based on a true story and we all could have said, all right, you're dealing with these two polar ends of the spectrum, make it work. It didn't work for me in terms
too
of...
Too unbelievable for fantasy is basically what you're saying.
Too unbelievable, too contrived. Yeah, I mean, they're structuring a
Tommy
plot.
Wiseau didn't exist. You couldn't make a character that did Tommy Wiseau things.
They're structuring the plot to just have these two parallel events that are just tragic.
That's a 6-1 on IMDb right now. So like I said, kind of middling reviews.
It's a good performance by Natalie Portman. She's also not the pop star that a Beyonce and a Lady Gaga is. That goes without
saying. That's a little surprising to me. I would have thought Natalie Portman had like the cachet and the commitment to pull it off.
I would have thought so too, but it's very apparent. At the end of this movie, she's given a long performance. Like her next to her dancers, and she's just kind of walking around. Mm. And these dancers are going off, and they're athletes. Like we said with the wrestling movies, you have world-class athletes. If you put them next to actors, it's a problem,
right?
Usually, just
sure.
By sight, the eye test.
Right.
You know, I'm good at spotting athletes. I coach athletes, and it just bothered me. Plus, the music kind of sucks. So
That's a shame.
Speaking of athletes, though, I did kind of a back-to-back watch of two mountain climbing movies. I wanted to rewatch Free Solo.
It's only a matter of time before you're trying to climb up something. No. So you're watching way too many things where you climb.
This movie just convinced me not to do any of that because I watched The Dawn Wall, which was just added to Netflix. That was a best documentary precursor nominee in certain award shows. And it's a documentary about mountain climbers Tommy Caldwell and Kevin Jorgensen, who basically try and free climb the right side, looking at El Cap at the Yosemite Park there.
Right.
The right side of that wall, which is called the Dawn Wall, when the sun rises, it hits that side of the wall. So essentially, they're creating their own path of maximum difficulty.
Jesus Christ.
So you have Alex Hanold later on climbing the easiest path or an easier path.
Right.
you know, to the, whatever straight shot he can make, the easiest, most reliable path. These guys are doing it with ropes in the Dawn Wall. They're doing it with ropes, but they're also doing it with their bare hands. So they take it pitch by pitch, which is 150 feet or 200 feet at a time, and they live on the wall for 20 days to get this thing done. So it's it was a project where they trained for 5 years to find the path, essentially, and then they want to take it in one shot, but it's like almost a video game where you go level by level by level. And what a fascinating story. And but the best part of it, the rewatch with Free Solo, Tommy Caldwell is like a major mentor character for Alex Hannell. He lives, or at the time that he was doing this, he lived down the street from Yosemite, and he just really went at this wall for 5 years. So he was the expert, the authority on the wall, and Hanold basically had him in his corner. So to watch Tommy Caldwell in tears during Free Solo, describing the level of danger that this guy was about to go through, that added a whole new element. So as a companion piece, I could not recommend that back-to-back watch more if you can take it. The last thing I want to say about those two movies, I've never yelled at a screen, whether a movie screen or in my home, more. Maybe I was just too caffeinated because I watched it in the morning, yesterday morning.
Yeah.
But bottom line is I cannot believe I was screaming and moaning and groaning as much as I did.
Rock climbers and free climbers, they are a different breed, man. And I know that one of my best friends in college, he found rock climbing, found wall climbing, and he is still doing it to this day. It's like he bases all his vacations around it. He does all his free time to it. They're a whole different type of person. And they get obsessed with kind of conquering these peaks. And it's really to their credit. And it's something amazing. But there's something in them that has... I don't know if it's borderline like laissez-faire about life or death or what it is, but they're crazy, yeah.
I'm in awe. And then I'm in awe of the fact that you had two different film crews doing both movies, which is crazy.
Where do you find those cameramen? Yeah.
It's not just Elizabeth Vasselhelyi and Jimmy Chin doing this line of work. It's a whole other film crew.
Other people out there willing to hang out on cliffs, yeah.
Slowly but surely, Mike, I'm also trying to rewatch Oscar movies that have been nominated for a bunch. I watched The Killing Fields a few years ago, or was it a year and a half ago? We reviewed First They Killed My Father, the Angelina Jolie movie about the Khmer Rouge. This is basically from the journalist's perspective, both American journalists and Cambodian journalists. And we have, kind of a two-hander with an American, Sam Waterston, and Hang S. Ngor plays the... Cambodian journalists, and you have the two dueling narratives there. Just fascinating, heartbreaking, great performances. No wonder this is nominated for every single thing in 1984. I don't remember what it won, but in terms of relevance to today, you know, Yalitza Aparicio, non-actor, one of the all-time great performances by a non-actor. This is another all-time great performance by a non-actor.
Did win 3 Oscars in 84. Thank Best you. Actor for supporting role, Hang from
Best
cinematography for Chris Menges.
I should know
Best
this.
Film editing. Was also nominated for another 4, so it was a big hitter back in the 85 Oscars there.
To hurry up now, I'm taking a while today, but Emily is a strong horror film on Netflix about a babysitter scenario. I don't want to give anything away, but it's tough to watch because it involves some cringeworthy scenes with kids, and that was tough to watch.
I watched
for me.
This. Yeah, I've seen this previously, and it is bonkers.
Bonkers.
Yeah,
but I thought it was well done. It kind of
It's a great horror movie, or a great thriller, however you want to classify it.
It kept you guessing, and it's very suspenseful. I don't think they stuck the landing as well as I would have liked.
No, I agree.
But I did enjoy the watch overall. Finally, I wanted to say I've been watching a ton of YouTube clips of Conan, Leno, Letterman, because I read the book that you recommended to me, The War for Late Night, and I finished it in a week, walking the dog, driving to and from, The War for Late Night on Audible, and it's worth a deep dive in regards to the rest of your life with the YouTube in between. Bottom line, Mike, I have no life, and I watch too many things, and I listen to too many things, but that's my what we're watching. How about you?
Well, at least you have variety, because I'm about to make people very, very sad for me. I watched a couple things as far as cinematic and as far as movies go. It was just on HBO, and I was clicking through, and I decided to sit and watch it.
You still channel surf.
I do. I'm very
sad. Such an old fogey.
I really am. I watched Jupiter Ascending.
No!
My God.
The ears. The ears alone would have turned me off.
It is something. It's not great. I watched it. I remember... James Corden had Mila Kunis on not too long ago, and, right. and he had it for Spill Your Guts or Spill Your Guts, that thing where he asked that you either answer a question or you have to eat something gross. And one of his questions to her was, "What can you describe the plot of Jupiter Ascending?" And she just ate something gross instead of answering that question. So I was fascinated by it, but it is, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to get it. It's like 2 hours plus. It's not great. But that was fun. We saw Fighting With My Family. We saw Captain Marvel. We did those for OSPs. What I've been doing a lot in my free time, I've started this mini project that for no purpose, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago or something.
Right.
I'm working my way through every televised WWE event that's been on since the beginning of Monday Night Raw in 1993. Wow. So I'm on a week-by-week basis. They're all on the WWE Network. I'm watching every Raw. I'm not sitting through the 2 hours. I will see the beginning and the endings and keep up with the storylines and stuff, but I will sit and watch and see storyline progression and character progression, because I've already done this with WCW Nitros.
Okay.
But there's far more Raws than there are, and I just started. I'm in late 1999 now, so SmackDown's a thing. So now I have two shows a week, and any given week, it's a sad endeavor is what it is.
Well, what it is not so subtle, you know, punch in my face to try and make this a wrestling podcast.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, as a matter of fact. And Fighting With My Family has only kind of ignited that flame even more so for
me. Cool. You had a kind of a more of a reason this week.
I didn't need one. I've been doing this, but yeah, I've been watching every freaking Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-view in the interim, and just kind of going week by week through history because I'm a mental case.
Well, you have a more focused obsession for watching stuff than I do in terms of, especially into what we're watching. Like, you'll do a binge of something in particular.
It takes me so long, and this has been a problem with me watching shows too. It takes me so long to like commit to a binge that I just usually nestle into something I'm comfortable with and just will watch that obsessively.
Yeah.
So instead of like taking a chance on a Mrs. Maisel or something that I know I will genuinely enjoy and actually add to my life and quality, I'll just like, I'll watch Raw. Watch 6 years of Monday Night Raws.
That's fascinating.
It's now another word for it is sad. Yeah.
Well, are you watching this with a laptop in front of you doing other things? Is this like your background noise?
Yeah, it's usually like when I'm doing like research for the show or when I'm winding down at night and playing video games and stuff, it'll be on in the background. Yeah.
That's fascinating because a lot of what I watch is my background. No, and it's something that I kind of pay attention to.
But it's amazing to me that you're able to watch new movies as a background. I wish I had that ability. I just can't do it. And I wish I could. To have a movie on I've never seen before while I'm doing other things, I just will never get those things done.
It happens to me sometimes. Like, The Killing Fields, I was supposed to be writing show notes. It took me like 2.5 hours to write the show notes because I got caught up in The Killing Fields, and then I just didn't write the show notes, and then you're like, all right, the episode's done, and I'm like, oh, shit. It took me an extra 30 minutes to write the show notes. But sometimes I get caught up, and sometimes I don't. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, that's exactly why. And except it's not sometimes. I will just always. I'll either get caught up, or I'll take this mental deep dive, and I'll end up researching stuff that I just learned from the movie and going down these rabbit holes on Wikipedia.
Wow.
It's nuts. It's insane. It's not normal. It's not stable. I'm a sick man.
Well,
I'm saying.
I wonder if it's a compliment to the movies that we review in this segment or a negative. I think it's like both. Like sometimes it's a backhanded compliment.
It's a damnation of my mental state.
Well, like Emily, like that movie for me, I was my most passive watch. I would look up once in a while and I could still
How?
Register.
Really?
That was by far the most massive of all these watches. Like the Don Juan Free Solo, I barely looked at the computer.
Yeah, you were engrossed in it.
Holy shit. Or I only looked at the computer because I was too scared to look at the screen.
But see, even something like Jupiter Ascending, I can't have it on in the back. Like, I need to watch how ridiculous this is. Like, there was a studio
that
put hundreds of millions of dollars into this production. For no reason, they shouldn't have.
Yeah,
this is a bad movie.
True. You're more tolerant of bad movies. I wonder if that's because of your reality TV consumption.
It could be. It's a very real possibility.
You have more bad movie endurance than I do.
Bad movies, bad productions. WCW in its later years is another. Anything with big money that just continues to pour big money into a flailing or fledging property fascinates me. Because it's just, I don't know where the buck stops.
True.
And it just, it's always something I've always been wrapped up in and I can't get enough of. But yeah, that's what I've been watching, sad to say, and I'm going to keep watching it because I don't learn.
They learned about a lot about the mics today, audience.
So that's a good 20-minute start to this show, is MMO Weekly. Let's talk about you, the dear audience, and instead of doing 6 degrees
this week. At least we have our priorities straight.
Exactly. Me, us. Instead of doing 6 degrees this week, which we had a Martin Scorsese to Awkwafina, we didn't get a chance to promote it on Twitter. We only had a couple of responses, which
but those couple responses are good.
They
already
were great.
So we got to throw out the gauntlet here. You have to beat those responses because they're very, very good. So let's hear it. We have a very doable challenge from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese to Awkwafina. That's what we're concentrating on. We're going to bump that down the road this week because we had a couple different segments. We had us asking you a question. Somebody actually asked us a question this week too as well, Mike.
Yeah, we're going to call it Ask MMO and then MMO Ask. We agreed on this in the pre-production
cute
today.
Lingo.
So Ask MMO, this was from Aaron at Aaron... Or Aaron. Aaron V. Official.
He must have loved when that skit came out by Key and Peele. Son of a bitch.
So he goes, so I want a remake of the 1992 film Death Becomes Her with Emily Blunt, the Meryl Streep character.
I believe he means the Oscar-winning 1992 film Death Becomes Her. Thank you very much.
And Emma Stone as the Goldie Hawn character. What do you all think? So that's it's a tough question for us. Because we so love Death Becomes Her.
Yes.
It's one of our favorite horror movies.
Is Robert Zemeckis doing the reboot here? Is he still...
Well, he's been hit and miss, but he probably
does
do an okay job. But I would probably like Yorgos Lanthimos to do it.
Oh, Jesus, Malone.
Or, obviously, Jordan Peele or Greta Gerwig. See if someone, you know, or whoever did the Babadook. I want like either a horror director or like a horror comedy.
So you want it to be more... dark this time around, as opposed to the kind of horror comedy.
It needs to be a comedy, but it needs to be a horror comedy. So you gotta okay. Hire somebody who can somehow handle that. I don't know who it is, but I definitely think it has to be the right filmmaker. But according to his casting, I think that's well cast.
Well, Emily Blunt and Emma Stone, any of the A-listers in Hollywood, if you team them up, yes, I will see anything they do.
Right.
So that's an easy out. As far as these two filling these roles, Emily Blunt being the Meryl Streep character and Emma Stone being the Goldie Hawn character, I think it'd be more of a departure for Emma Stone here, right? But we just saw her do something that's out of her comfort zone in The Favorite. So yeah. I was very worried about The Favorite when it first came out, but she killed it in class with flying colors.
True.
So I would have the full faith and confidence that she could pull off that kind of role.
Right. So I do think Emma Stone, it's right in her wheelhouse after The Favorite. I agree with you there. Emily Blunt, I don't know if she's ever made an at-your-throat comedy in terms of like the game within the game, the cat and mouse game kind of a comedy. She definitely hasn't made a horror comedy. She's made horror movies.
She's made horror movies. I don't think she's been in a horror
movies
comedy.
With comedic elements. She pulls off comedy. I mean, I thought she was kind of funny in Mary Poppins. I laughed at some stuff from the trailers.
And she plays different characters. I mean, Devil Wears Prada. She was a very non-Emily Blunt, you know, traditional type of role for her. And I thought she was great in that.
Now, the question that I asked him back, I haven't heard from Aaron yet, but who would play the Bruce Willis character? Should it just be Bruce Willis again?
It's just the same character, and he just happened upon the same circumstance with two different women again.
Which adds this kind of gross thing to it. Like, he's this old fogey guy who has these young women.
Yeah, let's not do that. There's enough of that in Hollywood right
now.
So cast Bruce Willis. Who's Bruce Willis right now? Give me a name.
I don't know. I couldn't think of it before. I was thinking maybe... You know, like a Chris Pratt is probably pull it off. Like, think about Bruce Willis. The reason that it was funny with him is he was such an action hero at the time, and he played this fat, you know, plastic surgeon, this bald, fat, non-athletic, at
so
the mercy
to be
of
like
these
a,
women.
He'd need to be like a stud that kind of is playing out of shape, and that's where kind of a lot of the humor lies. So, like Idris Elba, I think would be.
That would be
work for me.
Yeah,
that would have him ugly himself up and
always
put on a little pound. Yeah,
always has a physicality. Daniel Craig or after Bond, Daniel Craig plays that character.
See, I would say Matthew McConaughey, but he's already kind of done that. Gold role he did where nobody saw that movie. He was put on a lot of
Leo's
weight.
Done it.
Yeah, so let's have someone that hasn't done it yet.
Done it. Yeah,
and it needs to. I agree. It needs to be. Now we're going to be embarrassing ourselves if Bruce Willis is actually the same age as Idris Elba, but it needs to be someone that's. Younger than Bruce Willis needs to be believable that without the bordering on grotesque with the old man, young woman type of love triangle. Yeah, I would see Daniel Craig, Idris Elba, any of those, along with Emma Stone and Emily Blunt. Who's not seeing that movie?
I'm seeing it for sure.
And it did win the Oscar for best visual. It was a visual effects or makeup back in the day. I can't remember.
I don't remember. But bottom line is, I'm not against remakes. I'm just not.
Visual effects. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you got too many remakes. I get it. When the remakes don't work, I'm mad at it. Just like you are. Like The Thing, I was mad at. But at the same time, The Crazies was an improvement. You know, just to give a basic example.
No, I agree. And I don't, you know, as a rule, I think remakes have kind of earned some cachet, because there was a time in the early 2000s when we were doing them just to kind of get a cheap box office, like an easy box office. And they weren't, obviously, there wasn't the heart and the believability behind them. And you could stretch that out to the late 2000s before the 2010s. Like the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, remake of Friday the 13th. Those are not great examples. And they just were trying to squeeze blood from a stone. But now there's been enough of them done, and there's enough of them that have proven that they can actually be standalone property. So I'm with you. I wouldn't mind it.
For Oscar critics, A Star is Born, that added to our movie year. That gave us some of the best good delivered goods of the year, especially musical goods. So
it's a good question. I like that. Thank you very much, Aaron, Aaron V. Official there. That was a great quick question. If you have any other any other castings or movies you want to pitch and get our thoughts on, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, and at MM and Oscar on Twitter. But let's go with our question that we asked people this week. MMO asks, and I put out a little Photoshop job. I asked people for what they thought the best movie since the best year since the year 2000 has been for movies. And I put a couple options out there, and then I asked for people's opinions otherwise.
It was a fascinating set of responses we got back, because they're all over the map, which is just talks about your taste. So this was intriguing. The first response came from Jedi Dropouts Productions at Jedi_Dropouts.
I love that name, just because, like, if somebody drops out of Jedi school, what are they doing out there in that cosmos?
They're very intuitive.
They're just like going
regular
to,
dudes.
They're working at like the casino now. At the
you haven't seen Border, but basically they're like like the girl from Border, like the woman from Border. They're just like airport security, and they can sense what you're doing. All right. Anyway, 2014, the Jedi Dropouts production says 2014 because The Babadook, Big Hero 6, Birdman, Gone Girl, Guardians of the Galaxy, It Follows, John Wick, The Lego Movie, Nightcrawler, Whiplash. He says, I honestly tried narrowing it down to more, but the movies that year were just unbelievable.
Birdman was the big Oscar winner from that year. Babadook was big year for horror, I would say, because both Babadook and It Follows, which both got huge praise.
He's a horror fan. And Gone Girl has horror elements. And
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Nightcrawler, too. So, yeah, you could see, you could even stretch that out to say Whiplash. Yeah. Whiplash kind of has some horror elements as well. Ryan L. Terry, who is a friend of ours and fan of the show, had an interaction with a couple other accounts, which is, I thought it was kind of cool. After discussing 2010 with Epic Film Guys and KK Sam Podcast, those are both at Epic Film Guys and at KK Sam Podcast, and at Netflix and Swill, I'm going with 2010. Example, Social Network, which is near and dear to my heart, Inception, Shutter Island, Black Swan, Toy Story 3, How to Train Your Dragon, and more. But it also gave a shit like the Fred movie. And what's happened to that guy, the old Fred character from YouTube that had a movie featuring John Cena and then just kind of dropped off the face of the earth? And Netflix and Swill actually chimed in by saying 2010 is automatically disqualified for having the Fred the movie, or Fred the movie. Honesty Check at Honesty Check Pod also chimed in by laughing, found that response quite humorous, as did I chuckled from it.
Oh, 2010 is a hard year to beat, especially because it's so top heavy with, you know, probably A movies with Black Swan, Toy Story 3, Social Network, Inception for a lot of people. For me, it's probably an A-, but it's a very
good. I love Inception. I love Shutter Island, too. I absolutely
it too.
Loved it.
It's just so heavy. It's brutal.
And I thought it was I was able to predict it from like the opening scene. I don't know if that's a regular thing.
I was not.
Oh, all right. Because I thought it was fairly predictable.
You're basking in your own glory.
Though. That's me complimenting myself under the guise of being modest.
High-fiving yourself. Yeah. A podcast about something at APA, something. They say out of your list, 2001, but the actual right answer is 2008. Iron Man, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Pineapple Express, Slumdog Millionaire, Step Brothers, Burn After Reading, Twilight, Ugh! He makes the thing there. Cloverfield, Wally, Tropic Thunder, The Wrestler, 27 Dresses, The Strangers, The Dark Knight. Wow, that actually is a phenomenal year.
Says he ran out of characters, but there's more. Yeah, the biggest problem I have with 27, I wasn't crazy about Slumdog Millionaire.
Agreed.
And that was the one, the big winner of the Oscars that year. It always kind of left a sour taste in my mouth.
That's true, but Yeah, there's a couple I really... A great year for comedy. Pineapple Express, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Burn After Reading.
Burn After Reading was good. That worked. WALL-E was an all-timer Pixar movie for me.
Yep.
The Dark Knight was a great blockbuster.
It absolutely was. Little surprise he put 27 Dresses in there.
Oh, and Tropic Thunder was hilarious. But yeah, 27 Dresses, I've seen it. Like, I half-assed watched 27 Dresses maybe once.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel anything. I was numb to it.
I'm not crazy about it either. And just for record keeping sake, the 5 years that I did give people to choose from, 2001, 2003, 2006, 2010, and 2013, but I asked people to put in their own. That's why he said of the years we gave him 2001.
I missed Step Brothers. I didn't register Step Brothers in that
What
a year for
that
comedy.
That was a great year for comedy. So it's kind of interesting to see what these guys are picking based on, we can infer their tastes, how the first person had, you know, a very horror-centric slant. This APA is something very comedy-centric. Piecing It Together podcast at Piecing Pod, PIECING. 2017 is my favorite. I asked them why, and he said, starting with my top 10 I posted in 2017 and counting down the list, just so many movies I truly loved. I'd say not necessarily the top five, because we all reassess as we move on, but five of these movies will make my top 10 of the decade list. He has a big love for Mother, as do we here, and I absolutely adored that movie in 2017. War for the Planet of the Apes, Ingrid Goes West, Good Time, Three Billboards, a lot of big movies on there. He mentions The Florida Project as well, The Disaster Artist, stuff near and dear to our heart, because that was our first Oscars race that we covered that year.
Yes.
And we had OSPs of a lot of these entries. A
lot of OSPs. I would have a different top five, but I have a lot of those in my top 20 for sure. I had a lot of A movies that year in 2017, which made this past Oscar season different for me, because I had a lot of A-minus movies. I didn't think we had an A movie, but I had four or five A's with Get Out involved, etc., from 2017 film year, and I would agree that was a great year, and we kind of look past it just because it's so recent. We almost have a reverse recency bias.
Yeah, Ingrid Goes West is awfully high on his list. War for the Planet of the Apes, a lot of people liked that.
Yeah, I like those movies.
It's interesting that Get Out isn't on this. A Ghost Story is, The Big Sick is, The Florida Project is, and he doesn't have Get Out ranking that high for himself.
A lot of the movies he loves here, like the unconventional film, which is very, I respect that a lot. And War for the Planet of the Apes even is a bit unconventional of a blockbuster, which kind of, I like the conventional blockbuster, so I gave that a lot of shit, even though I gave it a good grade, strong B grade at the end of the day. But he likes the unconventional movies. Like A Ghost Story, I've never seen anything like A Ghost Story, anything like Mother. Ingrid Goes West was very unique.
Yeah.
These are unique films. Good Time. Absolutely.
I bet he loved Thoroughbreds this past year, too.
He probably
did.
That was unique, too. The Cinema Guys at The Cinema Guys, they say 2002, so many movies I love that year. Brad, Minority Report, Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, Gangs of New York, Spider-Man, Adaptation, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Equilibrium, The Ring, Blade 2, City of God, One Hour Photo, 28 Days Later, Resident Evil, and of course, Van Wilder.
Write that down. Yeah,
yeah, but this was, I'm in college, you're in college, we're watching these movies.
Oh, I'm not in college yet.
Oh, you're not in college yet?
No,
I'm
no,
so
not
old.
Yeah, you are
gosh
old.
Darn it. I'm not in college either. I'm in high school.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Blade 2, he listed.
I'm getting four-year chunks mixed up.
You're an old person. You're going senile. You're losing it, is what we're talking about.
I'm in high school. Yeah. I'm watching these movies a lot.
Time to put you in a home.
I'm also watching these movies a lot in college because I own them on DVD.
Yes.
Bringing them to college.
There you go.
That's why I'm
there
confused.
We are.
I needed to work that out. I apologize.
I feel like you were a big Equilibrium guy. X versus Seven.
I liked it. No, I'm not X versus Seven. Equilibrium was very different. I tried to rewatch that last year.
All right.
And I hated it.
You didn't like it?
I hated every second of it. I stopped midway through the rewatch because, like, this is not what I remember. I remember liking this movie.
It's one of those things, one of those movies that nostalgia got the best of you. You just didn't want to taint it with a recent viewing.
It was bad.
Yeah.
No, it was. I'm sorry. Equilibrium was bad upon rewatch. For me, now older and snobbier and much more hardened of heart.
Can't be watching this slosh.
I liked it in college, though. No question. I owned it.
Yeah, 1 hour photo I like too. Robert Williams. Anytime Robert Williams tried to go dark, I always appreciated it, and I always thought he never got enough credit for his ability to pull that off.
Right.
Because people just were desperate to see him and make them laugh. Spider-Man was revolutionary at the time. Minority Report, I don't know why they decided to make that a show, but it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. Yeah, the Two Towers is my favorite of the Lord of the Rings. I like Gangs of New York more than other people. Adaptation, all-timer for me.
You like the Two Towers most from the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
I do. It's my favorite one.
You have to be in the minority there.
I probably am. I like that the most. I think
crazy.
I love the siege stuff.
Huh.
I dig the siege stuff. Like there's the love story is most pronounced in that movie too, so I liked it.
All right. Good
I'm
to know.
A big Aragorn guy. Viggo Mortensen.
So that's why you love, yeah, that's why you love Green Book. This is all making sense now. All right. Vince Corvaia also got us at Vince, C-O-R-V-A-I-A, 2201, if only for Mulholland Drive. That was something that hit me right in the heart.
Yeah,
that'd
be my favorite movie. Pandering to you.
Yeah, right. Well, he's doing the right thing. It's got him mentioned. 2006, if only for the lives of others, which he called a masterpiece.
I agree.
He also followed it up when I told him that Mulholland Drive is my highest rated and favorite, most favorite movie of all time. He said it's definitely up there for him. Maybe the best of the decade. I never thought I'd leave a David Lynch movie in tears. And then he mentioned, oh, wait, The Elephant Man also happened. So, Mike, let's talk about, for your pick of these, I mean, we
pass.
I listed 2001, A Beautiful Mind, Mulholland Drive, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings, Harry Potter 1, Shrek, Ocean's 11, 2003, had Return of the King, Finding Nemo, Bad Boys 2, Terminator 3, 2006 was The Departed, Pirates of the Caribbean, Lives of Others, Borat, 2010, King's Speech, Social Network, Toy Story 3, we talked about 2013, 12 Years a Slave.
I've already gone cross-eyed.
You had a lot of good stuff in those years. So what's your favorite film year since 2000? What do you think is the best?
So I really want a website and like 50 articles. To break this down, because I'm really having a difficult time with
it. No, you answer now.
This is very, very hard, and I had to pause the podcast. Like I said before, top heavy 2010. I think those three movies are great. Toy Story 3, Black Swan, and Social Network, thank you. With Inception, probably a fourth A there. Oh, God. Off of what you've listed, I'm going to say 2010. That's hard. It's a hard choice.
I think for me, it's between 2010 and 2013. I think 2013, as time goes on, is going to be a year we look back on and see as like 1994. Just the 12 Years a Slave, Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle, all coming out, bang, bang, bang.
And Frozen being added to that list as a great movie for me, which I've never seen since then, or I've seen recently.
Not to mention Gravity, which also came out, Monsters University.
Gravity's tough to rewatch, though. It's not a very rewatchable movie.
Well, it's not a movie you could watch. It's not meant to be watched on, like, your own, you know, television set either.
Yeah,
you know?
Hunger Games, August, Osage County, not rewatchable. 12 Years a Slave, not rewatchable. It's just too heavy.
It is very, very heavy. American Hustle is very rewatchable, I think.
I would say The Wolf of Wall Street's not all that
rewatchable. It's tough. I agree, but they were to me just seminal moments in watching them and being just stunned by what these what these all pulled off.
Whereas like Toy Story 3, Social Network, Black Swan, those are I can study those movies.
Yeah, Inception. They do have. You're right. There's definitely higher rewatchability in 2010. I think I would go with 2013. I think the most responses we get was 2007.
Yeah.
I think I saw the most people saying that was their favorite year. So I think we had to pick a winner just out of a Democratic vote, which is something that's escaped this country for a while. I think 2007 is.
But the Electoral College picks something else.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God darn it.
All right, let's talk about a box office update here, Mike.
So no surprise, Mike. Captain Marvel wins the weekend with a projection of $153 million domestically worldwide. It really cleaned up. It picked up 302 estimated in foreign markets, so that is a total of 455 for 3 days of work.
Second biggest, this is from the Hollywood Reporter, so I want to make sure I get the lingo here right. Second best opening of all time for a comic book adaptation starring a new character.
Big time.
The first introduction to an MCU character, essentially, behind Black Panther, which did $200 million domestically. So 152 is nothing to sneeze at, certainly.
That's a big weekend. That's making money already for the franchise by the numbers. Because even if it's 2.5 of whatever I think the budget was like 170, 150, that's already 2.5 times the budget.
Right.
So now it's all gravy. So you basically made back your, you broke even after 3 days. Now it's just going to be making money hand over
fist. I'm so happy too, because the trolls aren't stopping with Rotten Tomatoes. That audience score is down to like 32% last time I saw it, which is disgusting.
Right.
They think they're doing something, and it's nice to see that the viewing public is onto this. It's nice to see that the trades are onto this as well and kind of saying, look, this is happening. If you want to see it and judge it for yourself, just be warned that this is maybe not what you can expect.
Here is a very difficult question for you to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
God.
Star Wars, we had The Last Jedi, receive a ton of controversial shit from audience reception versus critical reception versus polarizing stuff about The Last Jedi. And then Solo comes out, and Solo is an absolute DOA. Dead on arrival. Does that have any chance of happening in the MCU? Is it enough of a controversy with Captain Marvel, enough people not liking it, that then we have Endgame, that they don't like Endgame either?
I mean,
Will it bite into Endgame's reception?
Because Endgame, and if it had another movie following it, maybe, but not Endgame. Endgame is going to just crush. I think Endgame might make $3 billion.
So if Solo had polarizing reviews, and then The Last Jedi followed that up, you would think The Last Jedi still does well. That's your rationale with this comparison?
Yeah, if Solo came out and then, let's say, Episode 7 came out, right, just because The Last Jedi was so controversial, yeah, I would think that that'd be a fair comparison.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. How to Train Your Dragon came in second place. It's up to 435 worldwide, 119 at the domestic box office. That was about a $15 million take this weekend.
And you were part of that.
I was part of it. I was very proud to be part of it. And another movie that made big money, and it's going to continue to make money.
Yeah, it absolutely will.
Tyler Perry's A Medea Family Funeral made $12 million. That's a $45 million domestic cum at this point, only 46 worldwide. Comedies typically don't play beyond domestic.
The Madea franchise is averaging like $50 million a movie, so that's right on pace. I'm sure he was expecting maybe a little more just because it was supposed to be the final send-off for the character, but I don't think he could sneeze at $50 million for a comedy.
Here's what's very strange. Like, the Lego movie, the second part, is dropping theater counts by a lot.
Yep.
But... and it's up to 164 worldwide, no budget listed, 97 domestically. Not doing as well as a lot of people would hope, and which, again, I'm shocked by, because Ninjago and Lego Batman did well. So yep. You had two spinoffs do well, and then you go back to the main franchise, and nobody goes to see it. Very weird. It is. I wonder if How to Train Your Dragon just totally undercut it in terms of its durability. But you have it dropping in theater count and still getting fourth place. It's very strange.
I don't think you can look at the place. It's just a weird time for movies. I don't think the last couple years have been this slow to start Q1 at the box office. And it seems like 2019, people just haven't gone out to theaters yet. And maybe that's a mix because they don't find the movies appealing enough. Maybe Captain Marvel's our first quote unquote blockbuster.
Right.
And it took until the first week of March to get here. And we keep harping on these points, but they're important to make. The last 2 years, we had Black Panther in February, Get Out in February, which made big news and were headline grabbers, and they certainly created enough awareness that people wanted to go see them.
Right.
We haven't had that this year.
Here's the thing I will say. How to Train Your Dragon should be a Best Animated Feature nominee in any year. I don't care what's nominated.
It's just a bad year for that movie to come out.
The Lego movie now you're talking about?
No, again? How to Train Your Dragon, because it should be an Oscar contender, and it's going up against everything Disney.
Right. It's true. I still think hands down, I don't care what comes out. I mean, that's got to be a Best Animated Feature nominee. Yeah. It would have been nominated the last 10 years, in my opinion. I think it's that good. But bottom line is, we've had a strange February box office. Alita Battle Angel really did not do well domestically.
Not at all.
$78 million total off a $170 million budget, but it did well foreign box office. $304 total for $382 million cum off, again, that $170 million budget. So that's at least two times. Probably you'll get to 2.5 at least with the VOD take, so it probably breaks even or makes some money. It depends on whose formulas you take. New school formulas say you got to make twice. Old school formulas, 2.5 times. I don't know what the truth is.
Yeah, if you go historically too, this weekend is up 55% over last year, the same stretch, the same weekend, which is nice to see. So, it's tough. It's tough going. We're waiting for the blockbusters to come, and they are chock full. And now that we're already 3 months and 12 weeks into 2019, that only means we have 40 weeks left to get through every single big movie that we've previewed and talked about that's in the pipeline. So we're going to get at a point in another month or so where pretty much every 2 weeks we're going to have a huge movie coming out.
Huge movie. And as we're looking at the schedule far out with our way too early Oscar predictions, and that's definitely the case. So yeah, it's a strange week at the box office in the sense that you have the haves and the have-nots. You got a couple $10 million. You have Captain Marvel making a killing, and then you have everything else making $3 and $2 million for the entire weekend, and it's just really weird to me.
I think it's the best indicator is that Captain Marvel's 150 is like a solid 70-80 million above the best opening yet in 2019. So that's probably all you need to know right now. But like I said, the good stuff's coming. And sorry, trolls, better luck next time. Let's talk about the news of the week. News! So big news of the week, Mike. Unfortunately, sadly, Luke Perry, obviously, he suffered a massive stroke. He passed away earlier this week, dead at 52.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was sad news. I personally missed the Luke Perry craze by about 4 or 5 years growing up.
Yeah.
I was just too young to get into the 90210, and by the time I was a teenager and able to relate to it and any of the subject matter, it was on its way off TV as it ran for that decade of 1990 to 2000. I think people forget, though, just how much Luke Perry did in Hollywood.
I was surprised to learn of everything.
Yeah, he was a massive, massive success. Never mind being an actor in such 90s classics as the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, The Fifth Element. He parlayed his portrayal of Dylan McKay over 199 episodes in Beverly Hills into a full-fledged television career that would make Kelsey Grammer blush. I mean, this guy was in everything. I looked at his IMDb profile. I counted 35 TV series he was in, either as a one-off cameo, such as his turns in Community, Spin City, and of course his iconic episode of The Simpsons, or in which he was a long-standing recurring character, such as his roles in HBO's prison drama Oz, or most recently, of course, his 50-episode stint as Archie's dad in Riverdale. And this doesn't even mention the numerous other movies, both those made for TV and otherwise, he's done in the past 3 decades since leaving Beverly Hills. Guy was a bona fide bankable star.
That's above and beyond the typical heartthrobs career, right?
Absolutely.
You know, that's a working man actor. And you know, he could have just held out. Because sometimes when you're a heartthrob as a teenager, you only want to do the star roles. And then you see a lot of those people fall off the map in terms of their careers. But he kept acting because he loved acting.
You know, he
kept doing character roles, too.
He didn't do a ton of, like, blockbuster movies. And I think he tried his hand and maybe did. But he had this whole... There's no shame in being in every TV series that's been made in the past 2 decades, you know? I mean, that's a wildly successful career. And he certainly found his niche. And he was still seen as such a hot property in Hollywood that when Fox gave the green light recently to the 90210 reboot, which was going to use all of the original cast, Perry reportedly would have been one of only 2 original cast members unallowed to join the project because Riverdale wasn't going to let him do it because they didn't want to run the risk of him going back to Beverly Hills, reigniting the Dylan McKay role, and being such a huge star again that they either couldn't afford him or they would outshine his role in Riverdale.
Wow.
So that's when you have big major productions still worrying about you like that, that speaks to your talent and your star.
Absolutely does. Absolutely does. Hell of a career, and by all accounts, a heck of a guy too.
Yeah, there's all kinds of reports as to whether or not he would have actually done the 90210 reboot if he was able to. In recent years, he said he was kind of done with Beverly Hills and he had moved on from it, but who knows what would have happened if he was allowed and wasn't under contract with a different production at the time. He's also done enough to establish himself as a big time player, especially on television, without 90210 and without Dylan McKay, like Mike was just talking about. His star is going to continue to shine brightly, even though he's passed on far too soon. Maybe most fittingly, though, for an underrated actor that he was and somebody that's maybe become a bit of a punchline for no reason other than the fact that he was a teenage star at one time.
Right.
But like you just highlighted, unlike most teenage stars, he made a bona fide career of being a stud out of it.
Most teenage stars wind up on reality shows like survival celebrities.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Survivors. Celebrity.
But he just kept working and kept going. And so maybe most fittingly, it might be his last role. And supposedly has already shot, but he's going to show up later on this year in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he will get his big Hollywood blockbuster send-off, apparently. Very sad, far too young at 52, had a massive stroke. And his repercussions are still, it's reverberating throughout Hollywood. You could see all these people and all these co-stars of his from 90210 and people that worked with him on different various other projects all felt the impact of his passing. And it's very touching and sad at the same time. And we certainly here, we were fans of his and we give our best to his family and everyone that this loss has impacted. Really sad. Really a big loss for Hollywood.
Absolutely. Our condolences.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to be missed. We will miss him. There's no really easy way to transition off a story like this. We'll just try to lighten the mood here a little bit. Let's talk about some other news stories of lesser impact, and we'll talk about if we care about those. This is the Do You Care segment. This is where we take the lesser known news stories of the week and we ask each other, do we, should we, or would we care about them? And we always start off, do you care, by talking about the upcoming releases, Michael. Captive State, 5 Feet Apart, Wonder Park, The Aftermath, No, The Mustang, and No Matches, Free to Two, all coming out No Matches, 3-2, I'm sorry, all coming out this week. Do you care about any of them?
I care about one of them because one of our favorite listeners cares about one of them so much that he did a guess the plot for Captive State. So this is at Colby Told Me with a K. He calls it Mike, Mike, and Mac. 100% totally accurate. Guess the plot for Captive State. Nearly two decades since the Battle of 8 Mile, little did the residents of Detroit know that millions of light years away, B-Rabbit's epic bars reached a highly advanced alien race that would embark on a long journey for Earth. Earth, now knowing they are not alone in the universe, are faced with massive spaceships on its front lawn. Do they come in peace, Mike?
Probably not.
The ships sit hovering above cities for weeks until giant speakers descend and start blaring Lose Yourself on a Loop.
I mean, if we're going to go out, that's a decent way
way. It's a pretty good song back in the day. I haven't listened to it in a while, so yeah, it kind of holds up. The military calls in the only man that can help bridge the gap between this extraterrestrial presence and us. Of course, that is Eminem.
Naturally.
Years of intense diplomacy, top 5 dead or alive debates, and a new artist, quotes alien.
Needs to be workshopped a little.
Whose musical stardom is on the rise, which brings about a story on social conflict, identity, and inclusion in a world no one was prepared for. A group of rebels unwilling to succumb to this stellar cohabitation, who feel our new friends and their true intentions are not what they seem to be, seek to undermine the political efforts as they are witness to the devastation the cities below have undergone as a result. This is a philosophical level sentence, by the way, as a result of the occupation that's not been made public. I took philosophy classes in college that had less complicated sentences than that one. I give you credit. It, man, he's a writer in his own right, Colby Mack. Anyway, a young rapper from Chicago will rise and out of everything on the line, risk it all to save the only home he has ever known. Set to the incredible soundtrack, exclusively produced by Nas.
Can you imagine a movie like Nas, executive reaching out to Nas, pitching this plot? We need you to make a soundtrack for this movie. The ultimate, the big scene where the rapper stands up to the aliens would go exactly as the scene, the final conflict in Captain Marvel goes, where Brie Larson faces off against Jude Law.
I hope that he would write that in, yes. And I hope it would take a hour and a half setup by John Goodman selling the shit out of this being seriously like an Oscar-level alien movie.
Thank you very much, Colby Mack. At Colby Told Me. That's the previews coming this week, Michael.
Okay, Mike, coming this week, we have to Netflix, the movie Triple Frontier, written by The Hurt Locker, Mark Boal, mm-hmm. The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. And it is directed by J.C. Chandor, from producer of Most Violent Year, director of Margin Call, All Is Lost, etc., etc. You have a cast of Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, Adria Arjona. You have a Metascore that's solid, a Rotten Tomatoes score that's solid, at least in the positive. But premise reads, 5 former Special Forces operatives reunite to plan a heist in a sparsely populated multi-border zone in South America. Do you care about this movie? It's on Netflix, getting good reviews, and it has some big names in it.
I have questions about this movie. I don't know if I care about it yet. It is 125 minutes.
It's long.
It's not. And it's also got an 8.7 on IMDb right now. It's bordering on a 9 on 180 early reviews. First of all, if you're going to put out a movie and you're going to do the opposite of bombing the score,
right,
and try to, you're attached to the movie, you want to raise it up, I guess this is one way to do it, by making Triple Frontier, the Charlie Hunnam, Ben Affleck co-op recovery mission, a 9 out of 10. That's something.
I think they're trying to make this a big deal. I mean, just look at who's involved.
Well, here's what I care about, yeah, to that end. Oscar Isaac, Garrett Hudlin, Pedro Pascal, Adria Arjona,
right,
Charlie Hunnam. How many of them live, do you think? Who lives out of that cast list?
I hope few. And that would make
I think that's a guarantee.
That would make me care more.
We know Ben Affleck's living, right? He's going to make it out
alive. Does he have plot armor with that beard?
I think so. I think that's the only way he agreed to do this.
The beard is an indication of armor. It's a metaphor.
Right. And I think he was like, look, I'll do this, but I get to give the big, you know, everything's not as it seems speech at the end.
When Ben Affleck's in a beard, Ben Affleck usually acts the shit out of the role.
Charlie Hunnam dies. Absolutely, right?
Charlie Hunnam should die in a lot of things.
Garrett Hedlund, dead.
Because I like those actors. So if they die in more things, then I think I care more about
them. I do too, but they're dead. they're not making it. I would say Oscar Isaac, Pedro Pascal, and Ben Affleck live. That's my guess. And that's what I care about.
Wow.
Mark Boll, probably not going to take 125 minutes to find out.
Mark Boll is a good writer, though.
Move on here, Mike. Stan Lee's cameo in Captain Marvel included a Mallrats Easter egg. Kevin Smith was on Twitter about this recently this weekend, saying what an honor it was and how he had parodied and mentioned Stan Lee so much in his movies. It was an honor for Stan Lee to be attached to him. Do you care?
I just wanted to hit this quick because I do care about it. It makes that scene make sense to me because I had trouble with it in our spoiler section of Captain Marvel's review. Now I get it. So that's the fact that it's a Mallrats Easter egg. And now I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm ashamed at myself for not putting that together at the time that, of course, Stanley was in Mallrats giving the big speech. And that's, you know, I hate myself.
Mike, Judd Apatow was just interviewed and they said, well, Crashing was canceled. And he said, no, Crashing was not canceled. They just don't want us to make any more episodes. They just stopped us from making more episodes. But that's a joke. But bottom line, Crashing was canceled. This is a show that you got me to watch. This and my sucks. Brother John. This show.
This I sucks. Care a lot about this. This is a great show.
It does suck.
I don't understand. I guess the season three finale, by the time you hear this, it'll be Monday. So the season three finale would have been last night at 10 o'clock, which is going to act as the series finale, I guess.
Yeah.
And it looks like a very interesting episode. John Mulaney, who couldn't find a hotter comic in the world right now to have as the linchpin for your finale, but he's in it. I'm so saddened by this.
Me too. I was just getting into the series. I was binging it since the Oscar season, and I'm totally sold on it. I'm watching it week to week, and they pull this stuff.
I'm also surprised that HBO, I mean, it's been relatively successful in that there's been buzz about it online. I'm surprised HBO wouldn't, because it is a Judd Apatow, you know, they would just pull the plug on Judd Apatow like that. Little surprised.
I'm surprised too, but they may make a movie at the end of the day, so maybe that's
isn't that line. That's always the carrot of hope at the end of all these sitcoms canceled too soon.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. You son of a bitch. Yes. You and all your game. What do you call yourselves? The Thronenites?
Throners.
Don't do that.
Nobody's really come down definitively on this.
Game of Thrones, there's a new trailer out. Go ahead.
I love it because it seems to be a trailer about the first episode and the first episode alone. So, high marks for the fact that you can sell the movie on Act 1. And whenever you can do that or sell the movie or the TV show, I think that's high marks for the screenwriting. But bottom line is we get a trailer for Episode 1, which seems to be a humongous battle. And I am wondering, will this battle be the best thing I watch all year of the two-hour variety? Is it going to be of the two-hour variety? I didn't do research to check on it yet. But FYI, Mr. Spielberg, you may have the best anything this year, especially of that time frame or that duration. Game of Thrones Episode 1 of this new season based on that trailer.
Bill Simmons made a very, very interesting point to me in that with this new era of television where there's a generation out there growing up right now that's never had appointment television viewing, that has everything at their disposal and can watch whatever, whenever they want. He said Game of Thrones might be the last show ever where people are like, oh my God, it's 8 p.m. on Sunday. I need to find a television.
Yes, because they need to see what happens so much.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think television still works. Because if you need to see what happens so bad, and you have a cultural event like this, and you cannot wait, if they tell you this is when it's first available, you'll watch it.
Yeah, I think so. It's just nothing I could ever get in. I've tried three separate times. I'm sorry. I know I'm a bad person. It's not for me. I know there are many more people like you who are very, very excited for this, and I'm excited for all of you.
Well, here's the what's cool for me from a screenwriting perspective or a critical perspective. You have so much time nowadays to get hooked on characters and fall in love with characters and basically take their stakes into your psyche. Like, I am so connected to so many characters now after, 7 years of following these characters and reading about them in books. Obviously, I've read the books and watched the show. Now you have production values of the movie level. You have the money that they put into big Hollywood productions put into this first episode of a television show. So essentially what I got is I got a movie version of my show for this to kick off this final season.
I also wonder how much money, and I wish there was a way to quantify this, how much money HBO is going to glean from subscriptions and advertising otherwise to just be directly because of this season coming up.
I wonder when they're going to let the cat out of the bag about the... I don't know if it's a precursor. I think it's a precursor,
yeah.
Or whatever you call that. Prequel.
Prequel, yeah.
You have another Game of Thrones show coming out. But bottom line is they're going to market the shit out of The Watchmen mm-hmm. and all their other shows that are coming out during Game of Thrones.
Not crashing, though!
But you're also going to basically tell people that when we close out a show that you love, this is how we do it. We do it big, and we're going
to
get a hell of a
It's going to be quite the spectacle, and I'm also interested to see the rating. It's very rare anymore than anything other than the Super Bowl pops a massive rating on television, so that'll be interesting.
Last entry here, and do you care? Mike, do you care about the reception of Jordan
Peele? Yes!
Jordan Peele's Us at South by Southwest, and do you think it is truly going to wind up at the end of the day being that first film at the beginning of the year that actually becomes a legitimate contender at the Oscars? And I'm not talking about one category like How to Train Your Dragon at Best Animated,
right.
Or one category like Captain Marvel.
A big six contender is what you're talking about.
Yeah, is this going to be an 8-nominee, 5-nominee, a 10-nominee thing?
Yes. I do think so. The distributor for Us here is Universal. They certainly are no strangers to the FYC, the four-year consideration campaigns. They certainly know how to market. I think they also know what they have in Jordan Peele because we just saw 2 years ago, he's already established himself. The reviews from this are nothing but positive. I haven't seen one polarizing review or one negative take about Us, the movie. And it goes even deeper. I mean, you could talk about the screenplay. You could talk about Peele's direction. You could talk about the picture for Best Picture contender. Lupita Nyong'o is getting rave reviews, who apparently is a leading character. I thought she was going to be supporting.
I thought it was going to be picked
for a supporting actress.
More of an ensemble cast situation. But that can go either way. So, Clayton Davis tweeted back to us, basically saying, 1,000, 100 he put a lot of zeros before the percent sign,
which I'm thrilled about. I can't wait to see it, and I think that's awesome. And Lupita Nyong'o getting into the best actress race on a Jordan Peele property in a horror movie. If Jordan Peele single-handedly needs to drag up the horror genre to Academy prestige and relevance,
yeah.
Go do it, man. And he's in the midst of doing it. And it sounds like he's got another bona fide success. Again, did you see any negative words about this movie?
Not yet. I do think it's a surprise. Because I thought, somebody would have said something.
I agree. And even if you can't give full reviews about it, I mean, like you were just mentioning to me off air, that there's the whole restriction that critics can't talk about the movie.
Yeah,
you have to give it reviews.
They're all on Rotten Tomatoes right now. The full reviews are on Rotten Tomatoes.
So there is none.
I don't think there's a blockade.
I can't wait. March 22nd is when we get our hands on it. I'm very, very excited for it. I don't know how else to put it. And I didn't think we were going to get... I thought we were going to get another screenplay bid from this, If this is a Best Picture contender in a year again, I know you're going to get sick of hearing it all year from us because it's only March, but in a year we have Tarantino, Scorsese, all these big names, Disney putting out everything, I think it's going to only increase Peele's prestige and his profile to be in contention with those big names.
I'm excited. I can't wait. We're going to do a preview on it sooner than later because of this reception, so big deal.
Speaking of previews, let's talk about some trailers to wrap up here.
Trailer thoughts!
All right, four trailers to wrap up here that all debuted this week. A couple big ones. Talk about Midsommar for Ari Aster, Mike.
Yeah, the misspelling freaks me out right off the top.
Means something, yeah. Definitely
right off
something.
The top it means. But this is very Wicker Man-ish, like you've tweeted.
Very, very.
Ari Aster from Hereditary. Is this a sequel to Hereditary? I'm not going to say no right off the bat.
It's interesting. It's not something I had thought of before. It looks creepy as shit.
It does. And it's all in broad daylight, Mike.
Yeah.
That might be the freakiest thing. Like, we're going to see yucky things in the bright lights of summer.
We just talked about Fighting With My Family. Obviously, Florence Pugh, the star of that, is the star of this one as well. I'm very excited. The aesthetic looks absolutely...
Yeah, me too.
It looks so nice and pleasant and light, but there's such a devious and evil undertone.
The casting of Will Poulter really freaks me out too, because anything can go with him. Like, we don't need to have like a star making performance with him because he's played such jerks and he's played such fun characters. Mm-hmm. So he is like right in the middle right now in his career where it can go either way for him. I have no idea what's going to happen there. But Mike, we might be getting spoiled this year because Robert Eggers is coming out with The Lighthouse. Jordan Peele is coming out with a new horror movie with Us next week or 2 weeks from now. And then we have Ari Aster's new horror movie. Like, these are the three young filmmakers that we've been loving lately.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Let's bring horror back to the mainstream, man. I'm all about it. Yeah, I can't wait for Midsommar. I don't know why William Jackson Harper is in it too. He's the guy from The Good Place on NBC.
Right. Strange.
That's odd. Yeah, everything about this is odd. Yeah.
Oh, God. It's going to freak me out.
Fucking Ari Aster.
I'm already freaked out.
He gets it.
I'm already freaked out. That's what you want to do going into a horror movie.
Speaking of another movie that makes no sense on its face, The Beach Bum. You're a big fan of this one.
I love this trailer because basically it's like, all right, let's make our equivalent of the dude, right, for another movie. Like, this is Matthew McConaughey being the dude, but like his own version of the dude. Harmony Korine made the batshit movie Spring Breakers. We know he can pull it together for a fun movie. That's crazy. That's all kinds of things. And this trailer was gonzo.
What a cast attached to this, too. McConaughey, I don't know how you get McConaughey to agree to this role. It's such a wacko role. It's like the dude literally on cocaine all the time. But McConaughey, Snoop Dogg is listed as the second name.
Right. Martin Lawrence is in here.
Martin Lawrence, Zac Efron, Isla Fisher. The
facial hair on Zac Efron is
wild.
The most ridiculous thing I ever seen.
Jonah Hill doesn't look or sound like Jonah Hill at all in this trailer. I had to ask you if that was him.
Yeah.
This one is so bizarre. I don't even know what I don't know what this movie's about. It's angering me.
I'm in, though. I'm in. Here's what my one worry, and it's a big worry. Number one, this is a platform release, so I wonder if we're going to have kind of a commercial film. Probably not. So probably get like an art house film. So it's a platform release. It's going limited first. This is like a high-octane trailer. It is an up-tempo trailer. I think screwball comedy works best when it's in that regard. It's up-tempo. Like The Big Lebowski's pacing, up the fuck tempo. You had Inherent Vice, slow. You had, to me, Hail Caesar, slow.
Yep.
I don't think a screwball works when it's slow.
Well, they have.
I wonder what this pacing is going to be.
They injected like real life stakes into this. He's in a courthouse. He has to like get a job essentially or write a book essentially to like stay out of jail.
Right.
I also love the IMDb description, the plot synopsis.
Yeah.
A rebellious stoner named Moondog lives life by his own rules. Yeah. That's it.
It's great. But again, you know, it works with Big Lebowski. It works with the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
It does.
I don't think it works with Hail Caesar, and I don't think it worked with Inherent Vice. So I'm wondering where it's going to fall on that spectrum.
I also think you should get your hair cut like Zac Efron's is in this movie. That's my opinion.
I should, grow a facial hair like that. We have to do that at some point. Just have a labyrinth on our face, on our cheek.
Talk about Long Shot that also came out. Charlize Theron, Seth Rogen.
I am so mad that I love this trailer.
You love every borderline rom-com ever comes out.
No, I hate that I love this. If you're going to put a twist on the rom-com again and make me laugh during the trailer, which I watched you watch the trailer, you laughed too.
I did. It looks charming. There's definitely some wholesomeness to it.
Is it a remake of Pretty Woman?
Too on the nose for me.
It's mentioned in the trailer.
Yeah, to have that come out and be like, look, this is Pretty Woman, but gender swapped.
It's kind of a remake. Like, it reminds me of Notting Hill, where you have Julia Roberts being the Julia Roberts character, Hugh Grant being a regular guy, but it's like a politics version of Notting Hill. I don't know.
I also like Seth Rogen's character's name is Fred Flarsky. That's just, I don't know, that's just funny to me.
It's kind of funny.
Jonathan Levine, the director, he's directed 50-50, directed Snatch, the Amy Schumer, Goldie Hawn one, Warm Bodies he wrote for as well, which got some decent reviews. So
he's been hit and miss.
Yeah, he has. This is also one that's early in the IMDb running right now. It's got an 8.6 on 11 reviews. Comes out in May. Charlize Theron plays Secretary of State.
Go either way.
Falls in love with her former classmate there in Seth Rogen.
He usually makes me laugh, though. Damn it. I don't want to like this movie.
It's so it seems like very paint by numbers. I'm in it, though. Seth Rogen can do anything, and I'll watch it. So I'm there. And the final one we had is Tolkien. And Mike, you are not a fan.
I was very skeptical of this movie during the teaser phase. Now we get a full trailer. I still don't think, A, this is going to be very cinematic, because I've read this bio before. Yeah, you could tell a World War I story. But why? Why do we need another World War I story for this is just going to be an anecdote in this movie. So, all right, we got a World War I story about a guy who comes out of World War I, invents his own language, tells bedtime stories to his kids, talks about how he's invented his own language with his writer friends, and that's a movie somehow?
You loser is what I would tell this guy.
But then he takes the time to write a 3,000-page novel or whatever.
Here's the issue I see with this is that it's got like a Downton Abbey type of aesthetic. It's like very old English and it's supposed to take place in the early 20th century.
Yeah, he's a literary linguistic professor.
But then you have your inner cut with like these fantastic visions. Like it's borderline Lord of the Rings visuals and like fire and warriors. But if you're going to do that, just watch Lord of the Rings, right? Who did it better?
It seems like they're contriving all that. They're basically adding that stuff to the plot to make it interesting. And I don't think that's good. That's cinematic.
I agree. And I don't understand. I mean, it's done. You already did five movies, whatever it is, dedicated to this guy's life's work where you do the visuals better and you tell the story better. I don't understand the point. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. It does have a couple people we liked attached to it. Nicholas Holt, Lee Collins.
And Nicholas Holt's playing writers these days. He was just J.D. Salinger with Voldemort and 2 years ago in another movie. But
I don't know. This is, of the four, this is certainly the one I'm most trepidatious about.
Here's the thing, though. Dialogue sucks in these trailers. Yeah. I mean, what is it going to be? Oh, hi, C.S. Lewis. How do you view theology in the world and all life? Come on!
Yeah.
Dialogue sucks.
Not crazy about it myself.
Because I love The Lord of the Rings, and I'm mad at this.
But you have Lord of the Rings. Like, just go watch it.
I'm getting an Amazon. Yeah. A new Amazon show after Game of Thrones. I have plenty of Lord of the Rings. I don't need a Tolkien movie.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that this needed to be a cinematic adventure. Maybe it makes more sense as a book.
Plus, it kind of got punted to April.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be last year. Then it got moved around. Bad omens.
Nah, not a good omen. Not at all. So those are the four big trailers that came out this week. We covered them all here. That's where we will leave it and get you ready for the Hollyweird Week coming up. A couple of big things in store for us this week. You'll see those as we get to them. More reviews coming your way. More fun and games coming your way. We'll get to all those this week. But Michael, final words of wisdom here to get people ready for their weeks.
It's wise to talk to our audience. We had some great audience interactions this week. Remember, we have 6 Degrees of MMO with Martin Scorsese to Awkwafina. We already got some great responses on that. It was fun talking about the whole best movie year of the 2000s, of the new millennium.
Very, very informative, and then, as always.
Aaron, Colby Mack, surprising us with some fun things. So thank you guys. It's always wise to mix it up with you. Keep getting at us.
Yeah, and you can get at us, Mike and Oscar, on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MMN Oscar on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, and on Reddit.
Website's coming!
Everywhere you hear podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, etc., etc. Just type in MikeMikeAndOscar, you'll see us on the red carpet still until we're going to do the old logo soon, so it's not award season anymore. We'll go back to just wearing regular clothing until the winter months.
With the white abyss of space behind us.
Yes.
Of the blank page.
Yes.
Which is my scariest visual.
Giant metaphor.
I would rather all you know, like space behind it rather than just white behind it. It freaks me out.
Guys, when reality sucks, come watch movies with us. We hope you have a good week. Go take Monday by the balls. We'll see you soon.
See ya.